So we're almost there. I get to be the last person and introduce myself. And I will say that, again, I'm sort of reporting on some work that's been going on. Most of it was done by the other people that you'll see listed up there, and I'll try, as I go through the talk, to highlight some of the contributions of the various people. Oh, is that better? Okay, thanks. The other thing I want to do is, in case I talk too long and run out of time, just to quickly acknowledge the other people, and these are just probably I'm leaving out somebody else that also contributed to the project. A lot of it would not have been possible without the Mid-South Area Genomics Lab, and then the people listed below that are the ones, as always, who did most of the work. And then also Cotton Incorporated, because we wouldn't have had any money for the primers and things that we were able to use in the project without their support. So the goal was relatively simple. We're going to introduce reniform nematode resistance from a diploid genome into tetraploid upland cotton. And our group at Stoneville hired a scientist, Eric Sachs, to work on this. And he sort of took an overview of the problem. So we start out here, and we've got hirsutum. And then we have all kinds of choices. What he had looked at is already there was a group that was working, of course, and we've seen that with longicalyx. And he had seen that there was arboreum. Some previous screening had indicated that there was some resistance in several arboreum accessions, not all arboreum. And that also that as an A genome, it is, in theory, more closely related to the longicalyx. So he went ahead and used a hexaploid bridging line that came from Belgium and made a cross with a Gossypium arboreum A2190 with the hexaploid bridging line G731. And this one happens to have, as its diploid component, Gossypium aridum. And he did a lot of work, and in the end, he got one plant that came out that essentially didn't need to be colchicine doubled. It did it spontaneously. And most of that work is detailed in the reference below. So then he's got his population, and he crossed it to an MD51 nectarilis line that was developed by Dr. Meredith, and got a population which we called HAAH. Basically, it's hirsutum, aridum, arboreum, and hirsutum again. And he had 277 progeny, and then he teamed up with, Forrest Robinson in Texas, and they screened these progeny. And from that, it looked like they had some really good sources of resistance, and they had really good phenotypic data. So we decided, okay, we'll take a chance and see if we can take the most resistant and the most susceptible and try some kind of association mapping on the cheap. The first thing that we tried to do, because we didn't have a lot of money for this project, was decrease the number of chromosomes that we were going to screen initially. And to do that, essentially, I looked at published data, and I talked to people all over and decided, okay, we're going to first target chromosomes that were thought to have RKN or RNR resistance markers already, and also some chromosomes that had other disease resistance markers. So it was kind of a shot in the dark, but we figured if we didn't find anything with those, we can always move on and screen a wider number. And so in the end, we targeted 2, 3, 14, 7, 16, 8, 24, 11, and 21. And in the first round, we used 56 SSR markers. And I have to say, we were incredibly lucky. We got some good hits. And so then in the second round, we targeted then 11 and 21 based on the first round. And we used 48 additional markers. And all these markers are available through the cotton marker database information. They're all publicly available. So then the one surprise about it, though, is that we've been targeting all the time that Gossypium arboreum was going to be our resistance. But when we were looking at the data, we found that at least part of it was that there was a really high association between the G. aridum markers, or the fragment sizes, and the resistance. So we decided we're going to explore this a little further and see what we could come up with. And that, again, is detailed in a paper by Romano et al. And Tagg, if you want to get all the gory details. But the summary was essentially that we had 76 plants total in our initial mapping population. The most resistant and the most susceptible is determined by Eric Sachs and Forrest Robinson's data. And essentially what we've got here, let's see if we can make it work. This is the total number of plants in this class for this particular marker. And then the second one is the number that had that marker that were resistant and the number with the marker that were rated as susceptible. And these are the ones that gave us the best data. And essentially what we came up with is that in this region, that BNL3279 and BNL2662 appeared to be most closely associated. So then we decided, okay, it looks good with those. Let's go. We had from that population that we took, the most resistant and the most susceptible, we had 198 plants that were still surviving. And so then those were screened, and that was work that by that time David Fong had come, and so he helped with the screening with that. And we used the markers BNL4011 and 2662. And essentially, again, we've got the total number of plants in the class, the number that had each of the two markers. And again, it held up really well. We thought, oh, good. But it just seemed too good to be true. And so we decided, okay, we're going to see what happens in the next generation. And so Dr. Romano had worked on essentially taking the population that was in the greenhouse, the HAAH, and selfing. And so we looked at 144 of the self-seedlings, and we did that with 7 SSR markers. And once more, we found that there was a good association, but it still seemed like there was something else going on there. And what we suspected was that because we also have the arboreum in the population, and that it was doing something, that we still needed to be checking that out. But we did get good enough data that we were able to essentially map it, and we had, for all these that are into LOD scores, the linkage groups that we used was a LOD score of 4 or 5, and also that we say it's the putative position because this tends to be a region that's on both chromosome 21 and 11 that there's a lot of duplicated markers. So then we went to Osman Gutierrez because he has some monosomic lines, and he did some work for us, and it's still not 100%, but it appears that it is on chromosome 21. But it is in a region that you can find many of those markers on both the chromosomes. And also, just as a matter of interest, these are some of the plants that are out in the field this summer, but I'll show you a couple more pictures too. So essentially then we decided that we needed to move the population forward, and Dr. Fong had come on board, and then with Dr. Statina, they teamed up, and essentially Dr. Statina took care of the nematode screening of the progeny and keeping us straight, and then Dr. Fong did the marker-associated mapping, and so he's looking for the Aridum and Arboreum, and this is just a picture of the BC2 in the field in 2009, and they crossed it on to another line that came from Dr. Meredith, MD15NE. And this is an update. Essentially, now they've got the BC3 F1 growing in the greenhouse, and that's what's here on the right-hand bench. And they're going to try again and back cross it. And if I believe it's right, it's again MD15. Didn't hear any of that. And then the other thing, though, is that we still come back to the fact that what Dr. Sachs started out in the beginning was the arboreum and what was going on with that. And we've tested it a number of times, and it is resistant. But it's complicated by the fact it's got all these other things in that particular population. We could get some indications, but the thought was that it would be easier to work out the genetics and find the SSR markers associated with the G. arboreum resistance using a straight F2 population. And again, we were lucky because Dr. Sachs had made one with A282, which is susceptible, and then the arboreum, which is the resistant line. And they're currently now are evaluating that F2 population. So Dr. Satina is doing the growth chamber, and Dr. Fong is doing the genotyping. And hopefully this time next year, they'll be able to tell you what happened with that. Then just very briefly, the future of what this project is going on. Hopefully they're going to have a new nematologist geneticist on board and work on further backcrossing of the germplasm in the HAA population, and also to screen arboreum and herbaceum accessions to see if they can find new sources of resistance, and also to possibly combine multiple resistant sources. For instance, if you've got GB713 on chromosome 21 and you have Lonrin on 11, that perhaps you can build some stacked resistance, and then also to try and transfer some new sources. And do I have any time left? We're all done.
You're in charge.
I'm in charge.
And we've run over 10 minutes anyway.
Anyway, this is just some talking points at coffee or whenever. Is one of the things is that there really is this duplicated region, but is it possibly a hot spot for reniform resistance, root knot resistance, maybe other resistance loci? And also that this BNL3279 seems to be playing a role in a number of different resistance sources. And is there some commonality there? And then the last part is that we've done some work also with Peggy Thaxton and Lonrin plus some of her material that came from her crosses. And we found some other markers that are associated flanking that might help with the marker-assisted breeding. And that's it for that session. If you have any questions for me, that's good, or any of the other people, hopefully people have coffee and interrogate each other. Dr. Bell?
I just want to comment, since I'm in love with that region, 1121, we thought we'd do a quick fix on 190 and put that in and have resistance. So we took the section between 3279 to 316 from 190 and back across the game, five generations, and lo and behold, no resistance.
Well, that would be good. I mean, we could use all the sources we can get.
Thank you, Judy.
Okay,
we're done.
So we want to thank all the speakers. Thanks to everyone who prepared for this and presented. And Peng, I believe you want to close the session.